Welcome in to Slapshot Radio on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. We are pre-gaming Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. Coverage starting right here at 7 o'clock on 102.5 The Game. We're also going to talk Preds in the Stadium Series with the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber. It's all brought to you by Day One sponsor, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, the largest wine and spirit store in Middle Tennessee, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits, and our friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries Nashville, with three locally owned and operated locations in Middle Tennessee, and the man, Carter Church, your KW Murfreesboro real estate expert. And you know what? This is one of four remaining in the Slapshot Radio Series. I'm here with the coach, Brent Peterson, and Preds Insider, Zach McCann. Coach, how are you today, sir?
Doing great.
Good. I see you're representing the black and gold. Got your Vandy hat on, ready to go for Game 3 tonight.
Yeah, if I had my cleats with me, I'd be wearing them, but they put my feet up might hurt somebody.
He'd spike somebody. I know he would, Zach. I know he would.
He always slides spikes first. It's the worst.
Just make sure it's up. They come up quick. That's for sure. So I love it. We get the game two coverage of the Stanley Cup Final right here on 102.5 The Game. That's going to get going at 7 o'clock tonight. And so far, game one of the series, honestly, almost went exactly how I expected. Close in the first period. Eventually, Tampa was just coming wave after wave after wave and finally broke loose in the third period for three.
You know, it's funny because I've been watching, the run of Montreal, and it's eerie in some respects how it mirrors what happened in 2017.
Yes, it does.
And I think this is another case where a goalie drags you kicking and screaming through the playoffs, gets to that defending champion and in their home arena, and just all of a sudden everything's past him. Carey Price was by no means terrible, but he was not the Carey Price that they've had for three rounds now, and one has to wonder if he's finally turning into a pumpkin. So I look forward to his shutout tonight.
Well, he's going to still need to be better. He has to be the best player for sure on the ice for either team. Yeah, for either team. He's got to be the best player on the ice because he's going to get some power plays against them, and that's what
Killed Montreal.
Killed Montreal, and they only had three penalties or four penalties, but they had two goals late in the penalties, and they ended up scoring two on Montreal, who had allowed a power play goal in 33 before that. And we all know how good Tampa Bay's. What happens is, the coach says you got to be disciplined. Then you go in and you don't hit anybody, so you don't want to take the penalties. And that's what happened to the Islanders. They scored so many goals on the power play. Trotz is in there, screaming out, "You cannot take penalties, guys! You cannot take penalties." Then you don't go and do your job and hit people because things happen when you hit people. So it was probably, just like you said, exactly what we expected game one.
It is interesting, though, because you mentioned the penalties, and that wasn't a concern for Montreal for 32 straight kills that they had. They hadn't been scoring the power play since the Toronto series in round one, and one has to wonder if breaking that streak, can they weather the storm that is incoming, because Tampa Bay's power play is, well, in a word that probably still isn't heavy enough, lethal. Mm-hmm. And you look at Montreal, the only chance they have in this series is if Carey Price can come in and be the all-world Hall of Fame goaltender that he is. The biggest problem is you have one of the all-time greatest playoff performances happening on the other side of the ice in Nikita Kucherov, who's starting to bring records up that are being mentioned the same breath as people like Wayne Gretzky.
It's a fascinating series, and we're going to get more into it as we go along. But in Gary Bettman's state of the game press conference prior to game one, the normal, where they announce a couple of big things, and then Gary takes some questions along with Bill Daly. We'll get to that in just a minute. But the big news, obviously, coming out of Gary Bettman's presser, Nashville, Smashville, finally gets an outdoor game February 26, 2022, Nissan Stadium. It's the Nashville Predators and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And as someone on this show tweeted out, "Teacher, do you mind if we play hockey outside?"
Well, I just tried to capture the spirit of the thing. It is interesting. I think the thing that surprises me the most about this announcement is that it is going to be at Nissan Stadium. Whenever we were talking about outdoor games, it was always, well, maybe Vanderbilt. Maybe it'll be, you know, at the new soccer stadium when that's built.
UT.
It was, yeah, at UT. It'd be at Neyland, Bristol. Outside of town. Bristol would be one. It was never really a consideration because events at Nissan Stadium that don't involve the Titans weren't really a thing. All of a sudden, Nashville SC starts sharing a home with them. You're starting to see some concerts get announced from them. And I'm wondering if this is a result of the pandemic and being shut down for a year, if that's why you're seeing them being open to having events like this Stadium Series game.
You know, I believe when the Titans first came to town, it's like, you know, we're the NFL.
Yeah.
And we ain't got to do nothing. And, you know, there are plenty of teams that have that attitude or have had that attitude that now are starting to go, wait a minute now. We can play nice in the sandbox. And I think we've seen that, you know, to give the Titans credit.
From both sides, I think it's honestly driven by the players.
Yes,
because
I agree.
You see all of those. You see Roman Yossi doing the sword for the 12th man. You see Taylor Lewan cutting wrestling-style promos and chugging beer like he's stone cold.
And I think it's been good, but I think the date's pretty important. The 26th is going to be 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, weeks after the Super Bowl. So there'll be, even if we got to the Super Bowl, even the Super Bowl was on here, well, which it's not.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, a month, you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
And also, I don't think they worried about the grass or you can grow grass in the spring and let it.
Right.
You know,
right.
So
I agree with you.
I think it's just the day had to be at the right time. And we just hope it's going to be a sunny day or a nice day or a cloudy day, actually, is the best for those games. And
right.
Just has to be a nice day. And. And also, I think the February 26th was very important for them.
Oh, I think, and when you look at it, and honestly, I don't know. Obviously, we don't know day or night game. I'm going to bet right now it's going to be a night game.
I would hope so. With the weather here, you never know what you're going to get in late.
Well, and I look at, I mean, it was interesting because you know the Stadium Series game that I called about 3 years ago in Annapolis at the U.S. Navy Academy, they were having all kinds of weather issues all day. Nothing having to do with sun. Everything having to do with wind, not being able to put up the glass, all that kind of good stuff. So you have to deal with that. But the thermal energy of the sun is huge. As long as it's under 69 degrees at game time,
ice
is not going to be a problem. But it's the thermal energy that causes the issue.
Well, you saw it last year with the games at Lake
Tahoe.
Tahoe
was awful.
Which, I mean, one, stunning view for that kind of game. But it was kind of cool to see midnight hockey then happen because of the delay from the abhorrent ice conditions that we had.
And I think we've seen that in a couple of winter classics.
I feel like most of the outdoor games, when they've been afternoons, have experienced some kind of weather delay. I have no facts to back that up, but it feels like it.
Yeah,
I agree.
May not be true, but it feels true.
Exactly.
Well, they think it's the middle of the winter, and in the middle of the winter, like you said, the sun, as long as the sun's out, and they say the best thing is to have a cloudy day.
Yeah, actually, honestly, when you talk to the ice guys, when you talk to the ice gooers, the best thing is to have it at night.
Right.
I mean, you know, but when you look at this for their sake, absolutely, or at least after the sun has crossed the field, and in winter in Nashville. You know, the sun's behind you, you know, by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's off the field.
6:30 p.m. puck drop, be perfect.
And
even
again,
4:30 puck drop is dark still.
It all depends on when ESPN or ABC or TBS, when they want it to start, obviously. But it's going to be fascinating. I mean, first off, 70,000 crazed Smashvillians. In Nissan Stadium. All right, we'll let 10.
You're gonna see some Tampa.
We'll let 10,000 Lightning fans come in. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that place is going to be an absolute insane asylum. I mean, I'm knocking wood and hoping I get to do the game, and I'm really looking forward to this. And I think that it's a, you know, first off, it's fantastic for Nashville. Mm-hmm. One more time, Nashville goes on the big stage, and Nashville's going to just blow this thing away. As this town always does.
Always.
I mean, you know, and you don't go back. The funny thing about it is because you can talk to some of the guys, you know, from the NHL, from NHL productions, from the guys that work these, they still talk about the All-Star game in Nashville, and that was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, so
the Preds always do it upright.
They raise the bar every time.
And, you know, Sean and his crew down there at Bridgestone do a great job in all areas of the game, but they do a great job off the ice for sure. And now we just got to get our hockey team as good as the rest of the team is.
And we have plenty to talk about on that. We are just getting going here on Slapshot Radio. The voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, joining us next here on SSR. And, you know, I do want to talk to you about our day one sponsor. They've been with us the entire time. The premier sponsor of Slapshot Radio, Doctors Aileen Kruger and Tyler Boland over at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Man, a great staff, a comfortable environment. They do make it so easy to get all your dental needs taken care of with all the latest of dental technology, including in-office whitening, sedation dentistry, you name it, they do it. You got to check them out at their website, WeBrightonSmiles.com. Or call them for an appointment at 615-872-7762. That's 615-872-7762. Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. We brighten smiles. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, Kenny going deep with his first choice tonight behind the glass. Alvin Lee and Free going all the way back to 1970. Good choice. Good choice, Kenny. It's Slapshot Radio. I'm Paul McCann with Zach McCann, with Brent Peterson, and on the line with us, the voice of your Nashville Predators, a guy looking forward to taking it outside, calling his second outdoor game, the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber. Pete, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing very, very well and excited about the prospects of that, Paul, to be very honest with you. And as we always like to say, hello again, everybody. Here we go again.
Indeed. It's been kind of, it's funny because as you look at how the playoffs have gone, you look back and go, wow, it feels like forever since the season ended for Nashville. But here we are in the Stanley Cup final. And I'd like to get your take on this series so far. I mean, One game out and we're not completely surprised.
Not completely surprised. Well, maybe in one respect we are, that Montreal made it to this point.
Good point.
And they have overcome so much. And I'm not going to count them out, at least not yet. I mean, let's make sure one side wins four games before we do all of this, because Montreal was certainly counted out when they were down 3-1 in the opening round against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then what they did with Winnipeg, and that was skewed a little bit by the Shifley sort of sticking his foot in his mouth and losing 4 games of the series.
Yep.
And then what they did coming on to get into this series, I think it's been absolutely remarkable what they have done, what they have accomplished.
You know, Pete, I do want to turn the attention to the stadium series here in Nashville. And the thing that I want to ask you about is kind of a hypothetical situation. Suppose they do an alumni game here in Nashville.
Yes.
What potential Predators alumni coming back would have you the most excited to call again?
Well, there Cliff Ronning coming back once again. I'd love to see Cliff Ronning on the ice again, and I think Brent will go along with me here. That line with Patrick Schoberg and David Legwand. Wouldn't everybody love to see that, Brent?
Everybody would love to see two of them, maybe not the third guy.
It's not nice to talk about Patrick Schoberg.
I'm not very nice to Patrick Schoberg, am I? No, I think it'd be great. The other guy I'd like to see is Paul Kariya. That would be fantastic if we could get him out there. I don't know if we can get him off the surfboard, but we might be able to get him out here for a day or two just to put the skates on. That'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
I wonder if you get to see Martin Murat
again. He's more agreeable to that sort of thing now. You know that?
Yeah. I've heard that. I've heard that he's much more agreeable to that. I mean, he's done stuff with Anaheim, correct?
Yes, he has, and mostly as a result. So I think the go-between for us on that would likely have to be Teemu Selänne, because Teemu was very successful in getting him out when his jersey was retired by the Ducks.
You know, I think that's the thing that, you know, honestly, I haven't heard much discussion about, but one of the more exciting things about these weekends are the events that surround the actual game. The alumni games that you see come out, the family skates the day before, the practices outside and even the media skate out there that gets to go outside. I mean, I'll put on a pair of skis. I'd love to do that. And trust me, That's worth the price of admission to see how many times I bust my rear end.
Well, we won't have any trouble with the ice if it was cold as it was last winter. We'll be just fine.
That's a good point.
Well, guys, I've been at a youth hockey tournament at both Ford Ice Centers here the last several days. My buddy Derek Plant, now back at Minnesota Duluth, in with his second son, Max. And the goaltender they went against today was a very tall young man. And I look over the stands, and it turns out he is the son of Ilya Bryzgalov, the man who likes to talk about the universe and everything that goes around that. But these Minnesotans are talking about what they're going to do with the high school classic games they guess they have lined up to go at Target Field before the Winter Classic on the first of the year with the Wild and St. Louis Blues.
Oh, I bet that one's – I bet those high school kids are really super excited about that because, I mean, they'll be able to have that set up early.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And probably late, too. I mean, I don't think the Twins are going to worry about getting the field ready in the first week of January.
Yeah, probably not. So, but the interesting thing, so Ilya Bryzgalov's son, I mean, is he humongous big as well? Or, I mean,
yes,
you know.
He is. Yes, he is. His waist was almost the height of the crossbar. Let's put it that way.
Ooh, that's a big boy. All right.
Yes, it is.
So, Peter, I'm going to turn the attention back to the Stanley Cup Final. After all, we're kind of pregame in Game 2 here on Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5, The Game. And, you know, we talked about the surprise here, but, you know, there's always a piece. And, you know, Jeff Merrick talked about it a couple of weeks ago. You start cheering for individual players versus team. And yeah. I mean, honestly, I would absolutely love to see Shea Weber raise a cup.
I am big time rooting for my son, Shea. Absolutely. Without any question there. And a $5,000 fine for that alleged slash. I do think there was some embellishment on that one as well.
Oh, I agree with you, but I think a lot of folks probably remember the head smash in the Detroit series, and it may have been payback for that.
My friends from Detroit never let me forget it.
So
I'll never forget Shea and Andreas Lilja. Lilja made the mistake of trying to sucker punch Shea, and he then paid for it by not being able to play for the next 18 months.
So you look at tonight. I mean, Alex Killorn's out for the Lightning. They're not going to be able to go tonight, which puts them what, $8 million over the cap now instead of nine. I just like saying it more than anything else. But this Lightning team. I mean, you just don't see a lot of weaknesses in this team.
No, there are none that I can see, and their defense. I mean. All of a sudden, David Savard begins to have more and more of an impact as the playoffs have gone around. That was a great acquisition from Columbus coming down the stretch. I really, it's hard to find much of a crack, even the beginnings of a slight little crevice in that team. But I'm still hoping that Montreal can make that a pretty good series and maybe give Shea a legitimate chance. I noticed that there was an AP story this last week that talked about how Shea Weber was a part of the Predator Stanley Cup finalists. And I immediately texted the guy and I said, guys, no, there was that trade made for P.K. Subban. So Shea, unfortunately, was not part of that team.
Well, Petey, it's sort of easy to cheer for Montreal when you because of Shea Weber. But I think I cheer for Montreal because I hate Tampa Bay so much. So that's... That's
and
because
that could have played into the Stadium Series game.
Right. And it's, we're going to play them, and it's going to be more and more. And we're going to be back in the old divisions, and then we play across the conference, and we play them. But I just think it's been so – we talked about this a couple weeks ago about the penalties and the referees and all those things.
Yeah.
It's been nasty. And a hook or a hold or a slash or a punch to the head right beside the referee, and he just says, let's it go. Is that the way our game should be played, or is it should be maybe a little more Olympic style?
I would rather see it called more Olympic style. That's just my preference. That's the way I like to see the game called. But, you know, particularly when those infractions that we discern happen right in front of a referee's set of eyes, it makes you question vision, doesn't it?
for sure.
You know, when you look at, but you look at this at the officiating, and I mean, I think the only thing you could say, it's been consistently inconsistent, which in a lot of respects, and Gary Bettman was asked about that, and he gave the politically correct answer. I mean, and I think all of us know, we've all seen it up close and personal. We know how hard this game is to call. And it's not getting
any
easier.
Nobody sees that better than you do, Paul, from where you sit.
I mean, I look at it and believe me, and from where I used to sit, I mean, you know, I used to see a lot more, I guess, because from Section 310 as a season ticket holder, I thought these guys were blithering idiots. And I mean, and then you look at it close up, you look at how things go there. I have a great deal of respect for them, but I do think that it comes down to what message is being sent from the leadership of the officiating group.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think there's a consistent message going at all.
I listen to my boss for what he tells me to do, and I think, you know, if there's anything you can take away from this, it's that the league is getting exactly what the league wants right now.
Apparently they, it must be, because I thought they always wanted a fair chance at, you know, like, instead of, oh, I got one in this pocket, I got two penalties, in this pocket, I got two penalties, in this pocket, I got three penalties, and they're always sort of switching sides, and I just want the really bad ones, like the Shea got, last series got slammed in the board head first, cut him a little bit, other guys, high stick, did you see the that little guy from Montreal, what's his name? That was, he was bleeding all over the place.
Cole Caulfield? Oh, no, Brendan Gallagher.
Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted it to be and Shea should have got a game or two for slashing the guy, and you never know if a guy's embellishing it. So maybe that's why they call it that way, because they just don't know. So I don't know. I just figure that teams that have the good power plays are going to have more chance of getting you know, the right situation for them, but I don't know. I'm just frustrated at the referees.
I can't even explain it.
That's how frustrated
and
I am.
I think it's fair criticism, Pete. I really do. Because again, if you and I go back to and good heavens, it was painful for the first couple of weeks. But I go back to when the league came back from a lockout. And the officials basically said, we are calling the clutching and grabbing. We're calling the interference. And, Pete, you remember calling 85 penalties every period. And it was choppy. It was awful to watch for the first 2-3 weeks. And then after everyone figured out that they were serious, it was fun hockey.
Yes, it was. The teams and the players and the coaches all adjusted. That's the way I felt it happened anyway. Yeah. And I thought that, there were more than a few power plays at the outset, and that hurt the teams that couldn't execute on the power play. But I think that we ended up with a pretty good game as a result.
Well, he is the voice of the Predators. You hear him right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Heard him on this show for 9 seasons. And, Pete, you're always a part of the DNA of Slapshot Radio, and we always love having you back. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, and I'm sorry for that DNA test. I apologize for that.
That's all right. You just can't get away from it now. You just can't. He is the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, joining us on Slapshot Radio. And we'll be right back as we take you up to face-off of Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
With me.
Oh man, Kenny,
bat with me now.
Nice, very nice. Oh my, Kenny pulling out the classic sticks.
I had to once.
Well before Mr. Roboto, thank heavens. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul McCann, Brent Peterson, Zach McCann, Kenny behind the glass on the wheels of steel, pulling out the classic rock tonight. And, guys, so one thing I do want to bring us to, because a lot of hockey news coming out of Chicago in the last couple of in the last like week and a half or so. And you know, if you haven't heard these stories, they're a little disquieting. Some accusations of abuse inside the locker room. Zach, I mean, you know, Sum it up in 20 seconds.
Sure. Essentially, during 2010, there is an alleged sexual abuse that happened against two players for the Chicago Blackhawks by their then-video coach, Brad Aldrich. It was said that it was reported to team management, and then it was quietly swept under the rug. He was let go after they won the cup that year, and then proceeded to move to another place where he was actually convicted of assault against a minor.
Oof.
So you look at that, and now that it's starting to come to light, it is a awful situation. And if people were keeping that quiet and downplaying it, then I do believe that they are culpable for what happens after. You know, silence is complicitness.
It's a tough situation. I mean, and obviously this is just beginning to come out. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that a lot more information will be coming out. I think the first six questions of Gary Bettman's press conference was about that. Artfully dodged, investigation going on, we'll do the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And at this point, I mean, to give the commissioner a little bit of credit, we don't know anything right now.
Right.
We just know the allegations out there. We know some facts that surround that allegation. Unfortunately, here we are 10 years later, mm-hmm. trying to figure out what the heck happened. Memories change. Recollections change.
That's what I was thinking about. I think about everybody for 10 years. Why was this not brought up in right after it? And so I know somebody swept it under the rug, which is obvious, but it's just so sad that things like this happen and you have to deal with it and deal with it during the playoffs just to...
You don't want this story when you've got the showcase of the league going on right now. You don't want this story dominating.
And some things are just bigger than sports and bigger than the league. And this is one of those situations where, yes, I mean, you have conflicting reports starting to come out where you had one anonymous player saying that everyone on the team knew about it. Yeah. And then we actually had the first named player talk about it today with Jonathan Toews in an interview with The Athletic, who we'll get to shortly, who basically mentioned that it kind of annoyed me to hear that because I didn't know until after he was gone and after we came back from 2010 in that summer of celebrating winning the cup for that time, that was when he heard about the allegations because from the two players and basically said, he was gone. And then I knew about it afterwards. So it was interesting to hear a player who was on that team talk about it publicly and attach his name to it. We obviously don't know who the two players who made the allegation are, and I think that's going to stay private for a long time, as it should, and that's their right. I think the important thing is not who it was done to, but who did it. And if this is true, which it certainly is looking that way, you need to investigate and make sure that something like this does not happen again.
Right. No question. And, you know, I'm going to pivot from this because, honestly, because we don't know, I don't want to, I don't want to hammer this into the ground at this point, but I do want
nothing to hammer right.
Yeah, at this point, you're right. But some of the things that are being talked about, that if it did get up to the general manager, that's a problem. That's a big, big problem.
Especially if they went in the room and had a meeting about it, and then decided to cover it up, and those kind of things happen. But like you said, we know nothing. We know nothing really.
We don't know what happened. That's correct.
So we just.
But speaking of Jonathan Toews. Phenomenal article in The Athletic, a in-depth piece with Jonathan Toews talking about, as he put it, his best worst year ever. But if you look at something from the article that, you know, if you don't think you're susceptible, you may want to think again because Jonathan Toews acknowledges that he is probably a COVID long hauler, having all the signs of the disease, of a particularly nasty version of the disease, all the way back in February 2020, and he's still having impact from it. Fascinating article to read. Great journalism from The Athletic.
Did you hear him say his body just fell apart?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable for a hockey player of his talent and caliber. Just to say, my body just fell apart. That's amazing.
And this is a guy who is a student of human physiology.
Yes.
Has spent his life making sure he is in peak physical condition. I mean, say what you will about, you know, we're Preds fans, boo the Blackhawks. But Jonathan Toews is one of the best statesmen that this game has ever had.
I don't disagree.
And to see someone like that have this happen, one just hammers home the severity of, you know, that COVID is the worst dice roll that you can have.
Right.
And not only that, to have him, it's just exciting to have him possibly coming back. I think the league is better when Jonathan Toews is in it.
No, sure, no question. Sure. No question about that. When and you know, the description of the lethargy, the fatigue, you know, it's like, you know, arms and legs feeling like lead weights, labored breathing. Days when he could barely get out of bed.
And the fact that Kalitin took the pressure and took the criticism when he sent out Dylan Strome in game 3 against the Golden Knights when they were down 2-1 in their series in that last 50 seconds. Toews even says, I cannot say how much I appreciated him taking the heat on that one because my body was shutting down.
It's, you know, so if you haven't read it, you need to. It's a really, really good piece. But the situation in Chicago just is fascinating to watch right now between the legal problems, between what's going on with Jonathan Toews. And, I mean, let's face it, this is a team that has some good young talent on it. But needs that veteran leadership.
And the fascinating thing is that's not the last piece of news to come out of Chicago today, with Elliot Friedman reporting just a little while ago that the team is actively exploring, with Duncan Keith's blessing and permission, a trade to send him to the Pacific Northwest. There is no more specificity other than that. That could be several teams. But one has to think that Duncan Keith would be a valuable building block for a team like the Seattle Kraken.
Wow. I mean,
Northwest United States is, I think, is Seattle. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and again, if you're looking at that, I mean, that's a way to keep them away from an Alex DeBrincat, so I don't have to protect them, you know, or some other players that they, you know, that are at on the that borderline of just breaking out.
He's got 2 years left on his deal.
Yep.
And it's hefty cap hit.
He's from up there. He was Shea Weber's partner in junior.
Yep.
He's from up that area. And he'd love to go home, and he's won his 3 cups in Chicago. And I know that this guy, he'd be a great leader for them, a great way to start your. We started with Fitzgerald as our first captain, and he was great. A little bit lesser talented player, but
heart for days and leadership all over the place.
And that's exactly what Duncan Keith he's backed off on his minutes because of he's getting older, but he could still take 20 minutes and lead the team. And I think that's what our fans have wanted to find, is one or two guys like Duncan Keith that are at the end of their contracts and they can get them that way.
And well, Chicago was a markedly worse team when he was not on the ice last year.
Don't disagree with that. Don't disagree with that at all. And when you look at, I mean, since we've mentioned Seattle, we haven't had a chance to talk about this as the news came out after our show. We were on Monday night last week, so the news came out after the show. But they've selected a head coach in Seattle, and I don't know about anybody else, but that choice landed with a thud with me. Dave Hakstol?
Yeah.
Surprising. That's all I can say.
I look at – again, you're going to have a team that's a combination – of youth and experience. You're going to have a team that that wants to help each other, wants to play together. And quite frankly, that was his main failure in Philadelphia.
The interesting thing with this is this reeks of we're trying to recreate what happened in Vegas. Prior to his hiring in Vegas, Gerard Gallant was not exactly looked at as a home run, swing for the fences, this is your guy when it's time to win. So I wonder if this is what they're trying to do, is take a guy who maybe didn't get quite a fair shake on a rebuilding Philadelphia team.
Maybe.
Those weren't exactly contending years. That was still under Ron Hextall, who was building towards something before he was unceremoniously let go in that organization. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm bitter. However, one does have to think, is this a chance where, and we knew they were talking to people like Rick Tocchet. We knew they were talking to other kinds of coaching hires. He must have come in there with a plan and a way to say, we can make you contend and we can make you contend quickly.
Well, let me tell you guys one little story. When we first started, 1997, 98, I guess we started the league, but we started with Barry Trotz.
Right.
And Barry Trotz was just a kid that was in the minors coaching his team in Portland, Maine. And David went around the league. He says, I talked to everybody. Everybody says, oh, you should get a veteran coach who knows what he's doing. He went the exact opposite, and look at where Barry Trotz is now because of David Poile, decided to go with a young guy who
had never coached in the NHL.
NHL. I had 2 years assistant coaching. That's all I had. I had junior experience, but that's all I had. And Paul Gardner had no experience. So he went with and that's maybe why we lost.
but I
you know what I mean?
I agree. And look, you know, again, as you know, as head coaches, we're probably really, really good radio analysts. But when I'm not sure.
Silver goaltending coach according to USA Hockey.
Hey, but to me, I think Rick Tocchet was the knock it out of the park candidate in this, but, and only because of what he did in Arizona.
Yeah, because Arizona's done great since he left, and Arizona did great when he was there. Let's not all of a sudden shine up Rick Tocchet as some kind of bona fide winner.
You know,
no,
you know, I would have.
But I look at what he. But hold on, okay. Brett. But I look at what he did with that team.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that. You know, again, mix of veterans and new players. I contend that Rick Tocchet left that organization in a lot better shape than when he got there. And I mean, because let's face it, when Rick Tocchet got there, that place was a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. Ownership issues, location issues. You know, you couldn't fire a shotgun off on one side to the end of Glendale and not hit a Phoenix Coyote fan. I mean, there was a lot of development that happened in there.
Yeah, but it wasn't really him that did that kind of thing. He did the stuff on the ice.
On the ice. And that's all I'm looking at. That's all I'm talking about as far as that goes.
And he did a good job. The guy that I would have really gone for if I was Ronnie Francis would have been the guy, Brind'Amour. And they just signed him too fast. And Brind'Amour, you hear about the ownership there. You hear about all the bad things that happened. Brind'Amour was not signed. He could have gone to Ronnie and say, and maybe him and Ronnie aren't close.
Yeah.
We don't know the inside story behind these guys and who's close.
Who's
maybe
not. Right.
Hackstall went in and said, I'll take $1 million less a year or whatever. Maybe he's mm-hmm. you know, just to get a job. You're only 31 jobs in the league or 32 jobs in the world, and you want to be one of them. And that's what you got to take it when you got a chance. It's like right now we're talking to people about you know, used to be our assistant coach in Nashville
mm-hmm.
is getting
interviewed. Sure.
Interviewed in different places.
Well, they're talking about Lane again.
Lane Lambert again. Right?
They're talking about him again as a potential head coach. And I know the passing of his wife would, you know, kind of set that back a little bit.
But
I mean,
he's ready.
For good reason. I mean, but now, yeah, he's ready. And it wouldn't surprise me to see, you know, his name get bandied about a lot more. We've got one more segment to go here on Slapshot Radio, and we will be right back after I tell you about our good friend Carter Church over at KW Murfreesboro. I'm telling you what, if you're buying your house, you're selling your house, Carter is the man you need on your team because Carter knows homes. He's got over 20 years of media and marketing experience that drives his proven success as a real estate agent. I'm telling you, you need Carter on your team. Call him today at 615-429-2044. That's 615-429-2044. Carter Church from KW Murfreesboro. Carter knows homes. Oh my. Holy heavens. Kenny going deep.
Yes, Lord.
I like it.
Shout out to Mrs. McCann.
Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Yep. Denise is liking your choices tonight. Absolutely. You know what? And you know what they say? If mama happy, everybody's happy.
Happy wife, happy life.
There you go, my man. There you go. Slapshot Radio with Brett Peterson, Zach McCann, Paul McCann with you. Your weekly hour of hockey mayhem. And we're leading you right up to game two coverage of the Stanley Cup final right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Another championship being decided right now. Vanderbilt down 2-0, 3-0 now in the second inning. Not looking good for the Doors, but this team has come back. Time and time again, we'll see what happens on that, but we're behind Vandy, that's for sure. So, guys, what do you expect to see tonight? I mean, the interesting piece right now, Luke Richardson behind the bench for the Montreal Canadiens, the assistant coach. I don't believe that the head coach is going to be able to get back behind the bench. He's in COVID protocol right now.
Game three is
when they're expecting him back behind the bench. What, I mean, Luke Richardson has been bandied about also as a head coaching candidate in this league. Talk about having an audition on the biggest stage. What kind of adjustments, Coach, does Montreal need to make to have a chance against this Tampa team?
Well, the number one thing was they made so many turnovers. The puck was all over the place. They were all over the place. They didn't really get their chance to play a system at all. And you have to play some kind of a system without the puck. You don't need to play a system with the puck because you just use your instincts and your natural ability. And that's how you make two-on-ones. You create two-on-ones with the offense, and you don't allow two-on-ones against. So I just think that they get less turnovers in the neutral zone. Tampa Bay's used to playing all these teams that are very, 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 you know, not as no big forecheck unless they can get in there on you.
Right.
So I think they keep them off the power play and make sure they don't turn the puck over in the neutral zone because Tampa Bay comes back at you fast.
Zach, what do you think?
Well, you're already seeing one adjustment that's being made as Joel Armia is in for Luke Evans on the fourth line for Montreal. I think it comes down to this. Better commitment to defensive structure. You have to try and hold the line against Tampa. You know, no team has been able to really hold them down yet. I mean, heck, they're, what, undefeated since the in playoff series, since the big sweep against Columbus. But that Tortorella style of stifling defense at the blue line is how you're going to try and beat and slow down this Tampa Bay team.
And the Islanders were the best at doing it, and they got them to Game 7, but I'm not saying that I don't know whether Montreal could play that way, though. They like to run and gun. They like to go and go 3-on-2s this way, 3-on-2 this way, 2-on-1, 2-on-1.
I think this is where we're not seeing the other team at all during the regular season really kind of comes back and bites a Montreal right now, because they have been used to playing a little bit of run and gun in that rather weak North Division.
Exactly.
They had a good draw throughout the entire playoffs. And I'm going to say it. I mean, this is looking awfully similar to 2017. It really is, with Montreal playing the Nashville role and Tampa playing the Pittsburgh role, Zach.
No, I completely agree. You know, I mean, I said it the first segment, and I'll say it again. It's going to decide. Carey Price is going to decide this series. If Carey Price can rediscover the stellar play that he had in the first three rounds and will this team, then he's going to be in good shape, and they're going to be in good shape. If he falters like we saw in Game 1, then pack it up, and this is over in 4, possibly in 5 if they're lucky, and steal one at what is certain to be a rockin' Bell Center in Montreal for Game 3.
Well, they're going to allow 10,000 people. Is that what they're going to allow?
I saw they petitioned to get up to 16,
yeah,
so we'll see.
Yeah, petitioned that. That's good.
And the tickets are going for like $6,000 a piece.
I know.
I mean, they're going. Oh, well, I mean, come on. Let's face it. It's been since 93 that this team's had a chance to win a cup. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got more championships than, you know, any other team in, you know, in sports except for the New York Yankees.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is a city that's used to championship parades, and they ain't had one for a long time.
Zach is right. You can talk about forechecking. You can talk about penalty killing. You can talk about power play. Zach's right. Without Price, he has to be at his best the entire time, or they're in trouble.
So when you look at right now, I mean, this seems to be again the old David versus Goliath. But as Pete said in the second segment, you know, you still got to win 4 games.
Right.
You know, you got to give Tampa a lot of credit. They came out strong, and actually, I thought Montreal was in pretty good shape after the first 7-8 minutes. They survived the onslaught. They were at 0-0 after the first 10 minutes of the first period, which is where you really need to survive against Tampa. And I honestly thought they played a decent first period.
Well, I mean, we keep talking about, you know, what does Montreal have to do? What does Montreal have to do? At some point, we got to acknowledge.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Tampa is an incredibly built hockey team. And really, if we were doing the Jack Adams like you should be every single year, then John Cooper should win the Jack Adams every year. I mean, the work that he has done, the way that Tampa is playing, there is not a weak link in any of that armor.
I agree, and I hate that. I just hate that. I totally agree, but I just hate it because,
you know, speaking of awards,
I wanted to go here. That's exactly where I was going to go. Yeah. Go.
UC Saros finishing 6th in Vezina voting. which, you know, I think was low.
11th in...
And 11th in the heart, which I thought was interesting.
I mean, you look at any surprises for anybody on the awards? Anybody?
No, everyone who should have won one.
I don't think Fox should have won the...
The Norris?
The Norris, yeah.
Who'd you think should have won it?
Hedman. Or McCarr's pretty young.
So I would say McCarr, Fox. They were both incredible this year. Fox is the only reason why. I mean, to have the year that he had.
You shouldn't be giving awards out to guys that don't make the playoffs. PFT that don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I mean.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that or not.
Well, I guess not, because McDavid gets them all, and he hasn't been in the playoffs yet. He hasn't been in the playoffs one time.
Well, I mean, you know, and they went out in the first round. So, right. I mean, you know, you could literally, I mean, look, the awards are for the regular season, you know. And that's fine. That's, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, but the interesting piece is, though, there has been plenty going in the past. I think, you know, Shea Weber's lost to Norris because the Preds didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, so I understand where you're coming from as far as that goes.
Maybe that's the only one I remembered.
All righty, guys. Well, we are at the end of our hour right now. Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final coming up. Montreal and Tampa Bay live from Amalie Arena. We're going to join the coverage in progress here on 102.5 The Game. Puck drop right around 7:20, so you ain't going to miss one single thing. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We certainly appreciate it. We're back next Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Who knows? We may even be talking about a new Stanley Cup champion at that point. We'd like to thank our guest tonight, the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, joining us. Also our sponsors, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Cool Springs Wines and Spirits on Moores Lane in Cool Springs. Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries with 3 locally owned Middle Tennessee locations. And Carter Church from KW Murfreesboro. Carter knows homes. When you visit one of our sponsors, make sure you tell them you heard about them on Slapshot Radio and thank them for their support. For our producer, Kenny, our co-hosts, Brent Peterson and Zach McCann, I'm Paul McCann saying good night. And good hockey.